While we're waiting, I'd like to remind all of you to go to the Dot Zedna booth to receive your beautiful beaded pin that will give you access to the gala. Once again, if you go to our host's booth, they make beautiful beaded pins with your country's flag on it, and that will get you into our gala Wednesday night. Thank you.
We thought we'd put it in. Iran. Either of those three.
So if you can take your seat, we are almost on the point to get started.
I can't see it.
You're a celebrity. Oops. Okay, so I believe we should get started. So, very good afternoon and warm welcome to this Next Generation Directory Service briefing by the Expert Working Group. I am personally very, very excited to be here today in Durban. And this public session materializes a very important milestone in our journey for this EWG. So for today's agenda, if we can get to the next slide here, we would like to propose to summarize as briefly as possible the essence of our initial report. And in particular, we'll highlight the key findings and recommendations that we have already published. And then we'll utilize the maximum remaining time to organize an interactive and structured dialogue around few questions that we are still having open and for which we'll need your precious help. Then we'll save some time at the end for question and answer, more in a spirit of clarification of what we have already published. It's fundamentally important for us to create an environment where you feel very truly involved with the solution and part of the solution. For the mandate, as you have probably noticed, for more than a decade, very inefficient, almost broken WIS system, it's clear that the ICANN community has to find a solution. It's a must, and I believe we cannot any longer turn around these missing or broken processes on privacy, access, accuracy, just to mention a few of those. The statu quo is not also an option, as we need to put our research into the complexity looking forward of this internet solution. Hence, decisions from the board back in December was not only to implement the WIS recommendations from the review team, but also to create the expert working group to assess and redefine fundamental user needs and purposes for the next generation registration directory services. It was also good that we received a clear mandate from the board to have a fresh look at this very difficult solution and to recommend a revolutionary approach. Just as a reminder, many of you in this room, if I remember correctly, back in February when we get started, were thinking that this mission was almost mission impossible. So, in practice, what we were given to do is solving this equation, like who needs what as a data and why, in the best interest of the entire community of internet. This comes with defining, or I would say redefining, criteria and considerations related to the overall value chain, from collecting to maintaining through validating, storing, disclosing data. And that with a concept that people should now feel very comfortable to share data. I believe the trust element and respect of the data integrity is here a very, very important point that we have taken that very seriously in our team. The team, so as it has been said, there is no good project without having a great team, and there is no exception to that for the EWG. So thanks also to Fadi for his generous recognition this morning. But fantastic team by its unique diversity, technical Sorry? Ability to have very thorough, deep and extensive analysis on all key elements we examine. You're on the air.
Am I? Oh, I'm on the air. Sorry, I apologize. Can I come off the air, please?
But also a lot of fun into this group. Thank you to Chris and Rod. But fantastic also for their capability to work and to perform together. Very impressive skill, I should say, coming from the business side of the equation to reach consensus in an unbiased way, despite very, very divergent interests that each of the 15 members represent. So far, not surprisingly, I should say, but impressively, further to our publishing of our initial report on June 24th, I should say that we have received a lot of very positive feedback and encouragements. But at the same time, you send us a lot of constructive input remarks and requests for clarification that hopefully we will use this session to help you to understand better what we mean by our recommendation and insights. This is extremely helpful as it triggers further our analysis on the pros and the cons and guides us on the structure and the explanation of the who, what, and why. So, once again, like we've done in Beijing and the spirit of this EWG, each of the spokesperson from this table will be talking the name of the EWG and not in the name of the individual community they are supposed to represent. Also, and I think this will be explained further with Chris, don't be afraid that if we introduce also this famous timer, just to help us to structure a little bit the debate later on. So without further ado, I will pass not the air, but maybe the baton to Michele to explain
François.
Further on our initial reports.
Thank you, François. I'm just going to go through this rather quickly since a lot of you in the room have probably read the report. Some of you might not have done so, and we're going to provide plenty of links so you can find it, read the executive summary, but also actually read the report. So we published our initial report back on 24th of June. It's based on a lot of analysis of different use cases of registration data. I prefer to talk about registration data rather than who is, because who is what we're trying to actually fix. Fundamentally, what we're proposing is to abandon the current one-size-fits-all whois paradigm, as we feel it doesn't work particularly well or is broken, depending on which way you want to look at it. Under our proposal, what we want is to bring the idea of purpose into the system so that it's not simply a question of looking up some data, but why you are looking up that data. What are you trying to solve? What problem are you trying to resolve? Another key factor that we've looked at in every single thing is privacy. There has to be a privacy consideration in everything. And, of course, accountability and transparency and accuracy. Sorry, not transparency. Then, based on this, we form consensus on these principles. And it's very important to note that, as a group, we've actually been working together towards solutions. I'd love to say it's been a rocky road and there's been lots of tears, but that's actually not the case. We've worked very well together collaboratively. We've put in quite a bit of time into this, and what we're presenting is what we all believe in and have consensus on. So these principles are applicability, international considerations, accountability, privacy considerations, permissible purposes. We also, of course, looked at what was not permissible. Data disclosure, data elements, access methods, validation and accuracy, standard validation service, contractual relationships, and, of course, storage and escrow. In the more interactive part of this, we'll be reaching out to you for input. And please, if there's something you don't like, you know, make a suggestion rather than just telling us you hate it. So what we've proposed is the ARDS, which somebody has already managed to rename into the TARDIS because they thought that was a cooler name for it. I'm sure somebody will have problems with the copyright around that, but never mind. So in this model here, you have, on one side, you have registrants. You have the ARDS sitting in the middle, and then you have requesters for data. So when you register a domain name, be that directly via a registrar or somebody else, you provide data that goes up into registries, into the aggregated system, and then when somebody wants access to data of some kind, they have to request it out of the system. Now, the key thing is that there will still be some data available in a kind of anonymous type scenario, but most of the other data is behind a form of gate. A lot of advantages with the system, that you'll have a lot of data validation, and you'll also be able to put in proper kind of access controls for those people requesting access to the data, which would hopefully lead to a higher level of accuracy across everything and more security and respect for privacy. and as I said already, our initial report is based on consensus of the entire group. And of course, the other thing is there have been compromises. In my day job, I'm a dirty, filthy registrar. I've got intellectual property types. I've got people who come from the InfoSec community. You've got people who've got experience in country codes. You've got people coming from a wide range of different viewpoints. And, you know, the thing is, working together, there's give and take, the compromises, and some of you may find that some of our suggestions might upset you a little bit, but we'd like you to have a look at the entire thing rather than just, you know, ripping it to shreds. Have a look. Ask us questions. We think it's going to provide a significant improvement over today's system, and we're asking you, of course, for feedback on this. This is the next slide. At this juncture, I'm going to hand you over to the Master of Ceremonies, Mr. Chris Despain. Do you want the clicker, Chris?
Thank you. Oh, I'm on again. Excellent. It's a seamless. Thank you. Now I've got to learn how to work this thing. Okay. So, guys, we're going to go through a series of questions. There will be a long session at the end for... There will be a long session at the end for open questions and open mics, but we'd like to get some focused discussion on particular areas that we really want your feedback on. If there is any, we're going to give 7 minutes to each of the slides. It might look like there's a lot of stuff on the slides, but we've tried to put up the relevant information to ask the questions. So we start with our potential advantages and disadvantages of the model, which we've listed up there. And what we want to know from you is if you think there are any other additional advantages or disadvantages to the model that we've proposed. And also a very specific question, which is which of the data repositories should be authoritative? As a country code manager, my immediate response to that was, well, clearly the registry needs to be authoritative. It's the registry that actually needs to have the authoritative data, but others may have a different view. So we have microphones in the usual place at the front of the room here. And in the usual way, you come up and we call you, and in the usual way, no one's getting up except for Amadeo.
I felt your pain of not having anybody to answer questions here. My answer would be the same as yours, the registry. And as a matter of fact, I love many things in your report. I don't understand some of them, but, you know, I may ask a question later. And there are some things that I don't like. And the one I don't like is precisely this idea of the central repository. Beyond creating a single point of failure, risk, and easier access for hackers in FBI, what else are you trying to achieve there? The same can work just by having the set of rules and the procedures, but keeping the registries with what they have to do, even contractually, is having responsibility for the data that's in their zone.
Does someone want to see if they can tackle that question about In essence, Amadeo, you're asking why we would have a central repository, in essence. So the advantages are kind of up on the slide. Do you want to take it, Rod? Rod and then McKay.
Okay, so I think the essence of the question then is it creates a single point of failure / a really interesting target,
yeah,
right, for hackers and government agencies, et cetera. So I think, and obviously we talked about this within the group. This is certainly a concern. I don't know there's any more of a problem than big registries have today, because they have the same issues to deal with. They're centralized databases of lots of things, and as new TLDs rolled out, there's a handful of registries that have a lot of data already. So this is the same problem we all have. I think there's some advantages and disadvantages. One is a bigger target. Two, though, is that you have the ability to increase your security functionality, right? Whereas a smaller dispersed amount may not be able to. As far as government access, one of the proposals we have is to take a look at where this is hosted, the location in a more international nature. I think that's part of the policy development that comes out of this, but that's certainly an issue.
Yeah, I think that's right. Michele, did you want to say something?
Sorry,
Lanray, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, like any other systems, there are pros and there are cons. We recognize that as a challenge, but that can be surmounted. But if you check it against other advantages listed here, you will realize that it's still a far better option. That is a challenge that we recognize, and we're still talking about it.
Thanks, Amre. Just briefly, McKelly.
I think, Rod has covered a lot of this. I mean, there are obviously disadvantages which we're already aware of.
They're up there.
And they're up there. But, of course, what we're looking at this is looking at holistically, do the advantages outweigh the disadvantages? And at the moment, we're tending towards the advantages outweigh the disadvantages.
Thank you. Steve, I apologise. I know who most people are, but if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself at the microphone before you speak, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve Metallitz from the Intellectual Property Constituency. First, I just want to thank the experts working group. I agree you have made an enormous contribution here on a very difficult problem. I just want to make two quick points. First, on the advantages and disadvantages, I think one reason for thinking that it's more on the advantageous side is if you think about the situation we're going to, which will be 1,000 GTLD registries rather than 20, it more closely resembles the situation we have now with registrars in the thin whois environment. And I think there is a movement toward thick whois in the legacy environment. And I think some of the same reasons would argue for the advantages of having the ARDS as you've described it. The second point I just want to raise on your last question, on the thick whois working group that's working in the PDP right now, I convened the authoritativeness subgroup, and we had a lot of discussions about it. And it surprised me to find it's a more complicated question than it might at first appear. Authoritativeness, you need to understand what we mean by authoritativeness. And we found that in the current environment, there is no ICANN policy overall that says that registry data in the GTLD environment is authoritative. In fact, there is a policy that says in the UDRP case, the registrar data is authoritative. So I think we need to understand what we mean by authoritative. It's not a synonym necessarily for accuracy, the highest point of accuracy. It's what can we all agree it will be the actionable data. So I just raise that as a response to this last question.
That's a very good point, Steve. Thank you. Bearing in mind the time, if we could keep it short, sir.
Hey, Vasily Dalmatov, IT. I would like to point to several short things. One is the movement to the joint whois is quite the opposite to the movement to which all the system goes. We are going to more distributed systems, and the whois goes quite opposite direction. That's funny. Because it's known that the distributed systems are more stable and more reliable. Disadvantages which I did not see here. The disadvantage is that legislation about handling the personal data are different in different countries. I cannot understand how one entity on the world can satisfy all legislations. And otherwise, those entity who provides data to these WHOIS will broke its own legislation in its country. I cannot see how it is addressed here. And for which data should be authoritative? Authoritative should be the data at the source.
Okay, so Vasily, thank you. Just very briefly, the same problem of dealing with international laws applies to every registry, because a registry is resident in any one country. And unless you're going to limit your registrants to only residents of that country, you effectively have the same issue. I'm going to take... go ahead.
Yeah, my name's Wilfried Wöber, and the question is whether you are going to come back in under a different headline to the requester validation accreditation.
Yes.
Then that's it for me.
Thank you. Can I take the remotes first, Pat, would you
yes.
mind?
Yes, not at all.
Hi, this is Carol Cornell. I have two. Anton, I missed an unclear jurisdiction of the ARDSDB, was the first question.
He's unclear on the jurisdiction of the ARDS. Okay, good question, open for discussion. Rod suggested the moon may be, in fact, the best place for us to put it. Second one.
Thank you. This one's from Kathy Kleiman. How do you ensure that it is a really one-stop shopping for requesters? Won't the data now be in three places, registry, registrar, and centralized repository? What stops a registry from responding to its local government or law enforcement or IP community? And the last question, how does it become a one-stop shopping? With respect to the biggest registries, are not centralized databases, i.e. .com is decentralized.
Sure. Michele, do you want to just briefly deal with that, and then we'll go to Pat?
Yeah, I think if I understand the question, it's that, okay, at the moment a registrar collects data, sends this to a registry or not in some cases, and then you'd have this third system. At the moment, yes, with a thick registry, say .biz, you could query the registrar or the registry's WHOIS and get back the data. Mm. But that's assuming that the registrar is maintaining a publicly accessible WHOIS server. Under this model, the registrar no longer would maintain that, so that point is gone. Mm. And one would also assume that under our model, the registry would no longer maintain a publicly
sure.
accessible WHOIS server.
And it's also the case, isn't it, in any event, whatever you do, the registry and the registrar are subject to their own national law in any event. So that's just a fact. Pat.
Hi, Pat Kane, VeriSign. So kind of follow up on Steve's question or comment before was if you're a vertically integrated registry, it's easier to authenticate the data and thus be authoritative. But one of the things we've struggled with in terms of being the last or the only thin registry that we have today is when you take data from a registrar, you don't have the business relationship with that registrant, so it's near impossible to accurately authenticate that data. So thus, authoritative means something very different because you can't authenticate it in a centralized model
yeah.
or at the registry level either.
So I think I agree, and I think we're tying ourselves up in knots on this authoritative thing. I know what I mean by it as a registry. I understand what I mean. It's where it's if there is a gap between time, which one is the one that you can rely on is what I mean. But I understand that may not necessarily be the case. So I think we can take that we need to deal with the word because we haven't dealt with the word. Very quickly, Michele.
Yeah, I think I understand the concern here. I think it's a problem around terminology that maybe
yeah.
we need to clarify what we meant in that usage of that term. Because, I mean, my view on it would be that was the source that would have data that was of use to me and that was up to date, not
sure.
whether that data was 100% validated. That's
okay.
why I was looking at it.
We're over time on the slide, but people want to talk about it, so we're going to run with it. Amadeo, briefly, please, then back to Carol, then Becky.
Okay.
on the things on the slide, I wanted to go back to the question of authoritative. And the answer is, it's authoritative where the data is. And ARDS, or WHOIS, is only a subset of where the data is, which is the SRS. But for some data that some of these users might be necessary, like, you know, credit card information of the registrant, is at the registrar. So probably you don't have a single answer, but the single answer is not certainly at the central repository that's only getting the data from other sources. That would make things more complex. And the other question regarding the centralized thing, yes for access, yes for many things, but not for keeping the data. You have not convinced me. Your answer is, oh, .com has a lot of problems already, so let's export the problem of .com to .travel, to .cat, to .cop, and to all the news. No thanks, it doesn't work. Solve the problem where it is, but don't try to export it by creating the life of those that have not created this problem more difficult.
Carol?
Thank you. This question is from Michael Young. What are the next steps to prove the feasibility of technical implementation or to develop that further?
So there's no doubt whatsoever that there are things that need to be done in respect to feasibility, and that is at the next stage of this process. Becky? And then I'm going to close this line for this one and move on to the next slide.
Thank you, Becky Burr. I guess I just want to reiterate both the practical and the theoretical question about what are the advantages of the centralized model and why are they so much more, let me just finish, I mean, are they really so much more, so powerful compared to a decentralized model that it is worth what will be a very long slog, I think, in terms of actually transferring data to a centralized place from a registry perspective.
So I accept that. Some of the advantages include only having to accredit law enforcement agencies once through one place, because they don't have to go to each registry. But it's a much longer discussion to go through them. I mean, they're listed in kind of bullet points up there. But I'm actually going to move on to the next slide because we're short of time. So I'll take your comment next time, sir, if that's all right. Moving to the next slide. Ah, good. Got to love a picture. And the clock sits right in front of the most important part of the picture. So thank you. So basically what we're saying is that access to the data is going to become purpose-driven. So right now, all the arguments are about, you know, there's a lump of data, and everyone has access to that lump of data. And what we're talking about is moving to a purpose-driven access. So the question is, does that satisfy users' needs? Does it satisfy everything that needs to be satisfied? Because the principle is like, well, I'm trying to do is to figure out who owns a particular name for whatever reason. It might just be because I'm about to buy a bunch of flowers on the internet, and I want to find out if this particular domain name is owned by a company that I know. That's one level, and that presumably would be a fairly simple, straightforward, anonymous query. But if I'm law enforcement and I want a whole depth of data for some reason and I've been accredited, that's a different need. If I'm a trademark attorney, a different need again. Take a real life example in Australia. In .au we don't publish the creation date of domain names for various reasons, but we have a system where if you are a law firm and you send us a note that says we need to have this information for the purposes of considering legal action, we will provide it to you. That's a purpose-driven exercise, sir.
Hi there. Nick Steinbach from name.com. It's cool that you guys are trying to deter abuse before it happens with the gated system. There's some references in the report to, I guess, post-bad action accountability, so imposing kind of these vague penalties and stuff like that. I was wondering if you guys could just kind of clarify what you think those penalties would be, whether they're financial or access-based or something like that.
So thank you for the question, and it brings up a very interesting kind of overarching point here, which is that we are not trying to provide an immense amount of colour and depth. Our job is to come up with a recommendation as an overarching set of principles that will then result in an exercise in the right forum, which is the GNSO, to actually produce that sort of information. So it's not that we haven't necessarily thought about it or talked about it, but we're not actually about doing that, because that is the job of the policy-making body. Okay. Rod?
And just to speak that a little bit, we have obviously discussed this kind of a point as well. This came up. And this is one of those areas that I completely agree with what Chris is saying there. There are several areas like this where we will probably say something about it, right? If we haven't said anything about it yet, it's one of those areas that we'd like to get feedback from the community on. So this would be one of those. Because there are many sanction options. You can tell, you mentioned financial access. There's various other ways you can do that, and that becomes more of a compliance function at that point, not, you know, as part of the system. So it's an interesting area that we want feedback on.
Thanks, Rod.
Sir. Okay, thank you, Chris. My name is Remy Nweke. I'm from Digital Sense Africa in Nigeria. My question actually borders on the validation. And looking at the validation of requests, I'm wondering, are we going to have a kind of a decentralized system whereby if I make a request, maybe from Lagos, and someone else have to respond to it, one, the time difference is there, and there could be some element of downtime looking at the remote process of each part of the world where a person may be operating from. Are we going to have a decentralized way of validating requests? Thank you.
I think the simple answer to that is yes. I don't think we anticipate there being time difference issues with the process. Once you're validated. And obviously, depending on the level of validation, it depends on how long it will take. If you're law enforcement and you're going to have access to a higher level of data, that might take longer than if you're validating simply for the purposes of checking ownership details. James.
Hi, thanks, Chris. James Bladel. So I read through the report, although briefly, and I noted that you had a number of specific users and use cases, and I wanted to commend the group for identifying abuse as a use case. I thought that was important and creative, so kudos to that. But you also mentioned government law enforcement as another abuse case. And had you considered the use case of abusive law enforcement? Or governments that could misuse this data to round up a political or a religious group or something of that nature? Is that part of your... Yeah, I like your T-shirt, Michele.
Yes.
You did consider it.
Yes.
And I think...
Go ahead, Larry.
We emphasized a lot on accountability. Each stakeholder is meant to be very accountable, and if you are not, you'll get penalized.
Accountable to the provider of the ARDS system. Accountable to whom, I guess, is my question. If the abuser is coming under the guise of law enforcement, where's the accountability?
Well,
okay, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
We thought of having a process for accrediting the law enforcement agency, but specifically how to do that, we have not concluded. So it's going to be, before it's issued credentials, there's going to be accreditation of some sort. And if there's an abuse, one of the possible penalties is that the credentials are withdrawn. Is that
okay?
Fine. Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
James, just before you go away, two things. One, I want to make sure I understand your question. So law enforcement becomes accredited, right? And so an arm of law enforcement or whatever it is becomes accredited, right? So that's the first step. What you're saying is if they abuse that accreditation, what is the result? Yes?
Yeah, that's mostly the point, Chris.
Okay.
What I'm really kind of driving at is that not all government use cases would necessarily be legitimate.
True, and of course, in the jurisdiction that the law enforcement agency is in, if there are data privacy provisions, then they are accountable to those, if nothing else. But it's a good question. So if the
jurisdiction that hosted the ARDS was more lenient than that jurisdiction, they could use this as a bypass. Would be like one scenario. So thank you.
Good point. Amadei, I'm going to let some other people have a go first because they haven't spoken yet. Actually, you have, but anyway. But you said you'd come back on this particular point, so that's fine.
Yeah. Just once again, my name is Wilfried Wöber, and I'm having two reasons for being interested in this aspect. One of them being that I was with Susan on the RT4, and I remember that we did have our share of problems to find a definition of law enforcement, because law enforcement is everyone and nobody. And accreditation of law enforcement, is sort of a non-issue, because how do you prove that you are operating in a legal framework? But that's just an aside. The other hat I'm wearing is the incident response community, in particular in Europe. And seeing in that area that the majority of cases which involve some sort of domain names is actually taken care of by non-formal law enforcement entities, makes me ask the question, how do you expect to have sort of accreditation for organizations or people who are not just the man or the woman in the street and trying to find who is going to sell shoes in our country, but sort of who need sort of real technical up-to-date information? And how do you expect to do that around the globe in the various security response or environments?
I think we actually covered this as a use case. I mean, it was one of the ones I think Rod might have been... I think Rod and I were talking about this one, weren't we?
Yeah.
I mean, we definitely considered this. I mean, that a valid use case would be in mitigating abuse.
So a cert, for example.
And how do you prove that to the accreditation machinery?
Right, so well, we don't. I mean, as Chris said, we aren't getting into the nitty gritty details of the implementation because that would have to go through the GNSO. I mean, I'll let Rod speak to that a bit more.
Yeah, I was going to say that too. That a lot of the organizations you're talking about belong to standard industry groups, right? So there are ways of going out and getting membership. Accreditation, or the security community actually is pretty good about vetting other people in the security community.
I think that's right, isn't it? I mean, I think the security industry would take care of that.
Yeah.
Because
I mean,
the
security stuff works on circles of trust.
Yes.
I mean, you get into a circle of trust, somebody else validates you, revalidates you. I mean, I'm in several of them at Rod. You're probably in some of the same ones. I mean, it's self-regulating, I suppose, in some way.
Okay.
But it's still a valid question.
So fingers crossed, but it still sounds like a little bit of hand-waving.
Okay.
Thank you.
Next one.
Thank you. Pierre Bonis from AFNIC. The previous slide, we saw the advantages and disadvantages linked to the centralized the new centralized database. And when I check this slide, I wonder who is going to accredit, who is going to give the right to have access to this or that part of the data. Is it going to be one entity deciding for every law enforcement agencies in the world? It puzzled me a little bit. I mean, this thing to me is not coherent with a centralized database. Otherwise, you should have to have different kind of access for each and every country that have a different legal environment on accessing the data.
I'm not sure I actually... I understand the question of who's going to accredit law enforcement. The answer is that's part of the process.
I think it refers to local law, I think. You're referring to data privacy and local
law?
Yeah. I mean, Stephanie?
This is certainly where the details are going to be complex. You cannot allow the dog catchers in one jurisdiction to have access to the data just because the particular jurisdiction wants the dog catchers and everyone else to have access. So there will have to be basic policy that, of course, is not going to be decided by our group, set up that says, right, here are the criminal law elements, here's the different types of law underneath that, and here is who, and it's a limited group. It is the concept here is that you will accredit certain agents in certain law enforcement bodies. They will have access, and they will produce, and this is not a blanket access like a country club pass. It is a access for a purpose, and there would be parameters in the purpose. Now, this kind of accreditation is well known in jurisdictions where there's data protection law already, because, of course, that's how these things have been sorted out. Right, you need a warrant for this, you don't need a warrant for that. So that's the thinking, and we do recognize there's quite a bit of work when you span it out over the globe, but what's the alternative? It's one of the strongest arguments, in my view, from a data protection perspective, for a centralized system.
Just very shortly, the alternative seems to be the decentralized organization because it's closer to the national law.
But that doesn't solve. You know, look at the situation we've got right now as well. I mean, that does not solve the problem, because the only way a decentralized system works is if the information held is about somebody in that jurisdiction, and the request comes from somebody in that jurisdiction. The moment the information is about somebody outside that jurisdiction, or the request comes from outside that jurisdiction, it breaks down. Because how do I know in Australia that you are a creditable law enforcement agency? So the whole point about this is that everyone has to go through the same process to be accredited once. So instead of with 1,427 registries, once. And the checks and balances can all be put into place, and that's what the policy development process is about, can be put into place to make sure that the barriers are as high or as low as is appropriate for the use case and for the level of data that is being called on. Amadeo, I know you're still there. Carol, I'm going to go to you. Then I'm coming to you, Amadeo. And you, sir. Yes. Sorry, Jean-François.
Interesting point, because a lot of people seem to crystallize mobilize their attention to the centralized portion of what we present or recommend. And I think we should extend our view. This is not truly centralized, because we still have registries behind. I think you should think that into more the concept of a portal, okay, a gateway, and to help to synchronize the data, rather than just a master, big, incredible fortress of data. I think if we think this way, I think it's easier to understand the rationale that we have put
behind. I think that's absolutely right. I think that's right. We're getting stuck in this thing about it, and it gets back to that authoritative thing again. We're getting stuck in that sort of loop, whereas actually what we're talking about is effectively, as you've said, it's a... Yeah, okay. No. Carol. The queue is now closed on this slide. Carol.
Thank you. I have three, but I'll start with this one. Kathy Kleinman, thank you for all your hard work. Question, once you become a certified, does the certified party have the unlimited access to the data, but law enforcement can go on fishing expeditions, intellectual property can harass domain name registrants, and individuals can use Whois data to find and stalk individuals? Could you please talk about the amount of data, number of times you have access, and the limit on abuse before it happens, not after?
So thank you, Kathy, for your, as usual, measured view of trademark attorneys. That's too much. The answer is that's too much detail, I think. I mean, it is a series of questions that need to be answered. Presumably, certainly no fishing expeditions. I think we would all agree that. But from the point of view of...
We consider that a non-permissible use.
A non-permissible use, and either with a PH or an F. Jean-François.
Maybe one point is the principle that is above everything is about accountability. And if you start to abuse the system, then of course you are going to be penalized. We have not been able to go in the detail of how and so forth and the how to, because I think it's beyond what we have in plan at the moment. but this is important element. And the supreme objective, supreme principle is to remember about accountability. If you get into this thing for wrong purpose, then of course you are a wrong person.
Michele, very quickly, then back to Karen.
Yeah, I mean, Kathy's question is an incredibly important
one. Absolutely.
It's a very, very important one. I'm glad somebody asked it. This is something we discussed. This is something that we obviously saw as a massive threat, that somebody could go in, start fishing around, doing all sorts of nefarious things. So, no, it's something that we have considered, and what we would like to see is a situation where, as they have to provide a purpose for the query, no, they won't have unfettered access, unlimited access, to go off on a fishing expedition, to harass people or do anything else. And
absolutely. But the detail of the number of times and all of that is just way too deep. Carol, back to you.
I'm going to go on two more because they're somewhat related to this. Anton, so every individual would self-appoint himself as a law enforcement of his own jurisdiction, and every person in the world can have access to this data. What difference with who is? And then this next one, Michael Young went on to say, would a centralized system allow a type of access appropriate for security services combating domain abuse? This is the hinted at in the report, I think. Is there any proof of purpose? And you've talked about purpose, but that was the follow-on to it. Is there any proof of purpose with regard to requests? And that was from Sam. So they're all.
Yeah, I think we've basically handled that, in my view. I think we've dealt with it. Amadeo.
Okay, I want to go back to the slide, but not on what everybody's focusing, which is who can have access, but on the data side. I think that this idea is the best one in the whole report. The whole idea of, you know, different, not everybody needs access to everything. It's not all or nothing. We need to have, gradual things of who has access to what amount. And in several circumstances, I don't remember where that was in your report because I have only read that once the first day, had no time to go back. But I would even be willing to consider that some parties need to have access to things that are not now in the WHOIS, like the historical data that sometimes is very important. Right, that's in the SRS, but it's not in the WHOIS. Now, on the other part, everybody's completely right. The details will be tricky in preventing abuse here. But if regarding what Jean-François said, you are focusing in the wrong message here. The problem is, I do repeat, you don't need to centralize the data to do all this. What you need is to centralize the access and the rules. And now, my other question is this centralized, but is this uniform?
Amadeo, could you please slow down? I'm trying to follow what you're asking us, and I can't keep up.
Okay.
Because you're asking about six different things, one after the other. I'm trying to process each one, and I can't. To slow down a second, let's go back a little. Okay, so trying to break out what you've asked so far. You have concerns about who has access to which data elements. We do too, we've been discussing that. Your concerns about which data points or data elements would be considered to be more sensitive than others. We do too. We've been discussing it. Hold on. What else was there in there?
No, the question was whether...
I think Amadeus made it perfectly plain that he's not comfortable with the centralised...
The data problem is okay. Not the model. It's not just the data. And the question was whether this is also uniform. That is, whether the same rules apply for having access to the same set of data for all the TLDs, or there may be difference according to the TLD, because some of them, for instance, may be health-related,
okay, so
et cetera.
That's right? An interesting question, and I think it's something we need to consider. So the question is, is the data for all TLDs to be treated the same way? And I don't think we have discussed
which is an exceptionally good question. Just before I go on, I just want to point out that we are actually dealing with the questions that we put up on this next slide. The questions you are asking us are exactly the questions that we want to ask you. In other words, we acknowledge that these questions need to be answered. Okay, next.
Hi, I'm Fred Fellman. I'm from Mark Monitor. And I guess a couple of observations and maybe some suggestions to help you deal with some of these more difficult problems. First of all, one of the things I would note is that law enforcement agencies actually... do participate in the research of issues, but the bulk of technical and probably practical expertise in terms of researching these issues is outside of law enforcement agencies. And when you look at, for example, trademark enforcements online, that's one example where this occurs outside of the law enforcement their purview. You will see also most enforcements with respect to malware and other issues also occur, you know, with companies like RODS and others. So I think it's important to think about a broader security community, which it sounds like you're doing. The one thing I would note, though, is that some investigations actually look rather malicious, and I'll give you an example of a couple that I think are pretty interesting and might be helpful as you consider this. First of all, it might look like a phishing expedition when you like start to crawl through domain registration records looking for random patterns of how things are registered, because there's a botnet actually using some sort of programmatic way of looking, and you actually have to have very large-scale bulk access to actually decode these patterns to understand them. That's one example from the malicious code perspective. Another malicious behavior that was identified by pawing through domain records is when we had problems with the abuse of the ad drop grace period, where we saw systematic abuse by registrars that were deaccredited because they were actually dropping and actually passing those domains during the grace period, thus extending infinitely their abuse and of the domain naming system. So, and to decode that, it actually took a very broad look at the domain naming system and these WHOIS records. And so you may have to figure out a way to accommodate that kind of investigation to avoid harm. One thing I would say, just to think about Kathy Kleinman's issue that might help in all of this, is considering commercial versus non-commercial use. Commercial speech is not protected and is not protected by privacy laws. You must actually, you must reveal information about commercial speech. So maybe considering which domains are being used for commercial use and defining that clearly, and that might help you through that.
And we have indeed discussed that at some significant length.
So thank you very much.
Thank you. Sir.
Thank you. My name is Victor Ndona. I'm from Cameroon. I'm also a reseller of domain names. Just before this ICANN meeting, I was having a problem with a customer. We use an agent, a communication agency, to create his website, and that agency registered the domain name by putting the registrant data for the communication agency. And it has been dealing with the customer for 4 years, and the customer is not happy with the service and want to move and contact me. Can you move my domain name and from that company? First, I sent an email to, I checked, I went online, I used the WIS tools, check, and saw that on the WIS data, there is no mention of any information about the customer asking me to see how I can move the domain name. So my concern is this work is going to restrict such action as me freely access to WIS information and see who or I can say haunt the domain names. Or this work is going to accredit certain institution to have access to such data.
Yes.
The previous slide was showing the two cases.
There's
can the end user can, at the end of your work, still have free access to the WIS information?
Yes, a level of it.
Yeah.
I mean, this kind of scenario, if I understand it, it's the kind of thing that we would use as a registrar and our staff would use. So, yeah, obviously you're going to have access to a lot of the data you need to do this. Now, you might need to be authenticated, but that doesn't mean you won't have access. You just won't be able to access it in exactly the same way that you access it today, but you will be able to access it in order to do what you need to do. And hopefully the data you get in the future in this system will be a hell of a lot more accurate, up-to-date, and useful. Because some of the time you go looking at WHOIS records for domains with a third party, and you're kind of looking, scratching your head. I mean, you've probably seen this with blank lines, weird characters, numbers in the wrong places and all sorts of other junk, which is hard to parse. With, in this system, the overall quality of the data would be good. But thanks for the question. It's a valid query.
Thank you. Larry?
In addition to that, a whole bunch of data elements will be available for you to access without even authenticating. So I guess it's just a couple of sensitive data that are behind the gate that will require authentication before you can access.
And that's one of the questions. That's one of the questions for further down the line for policy is if there is a principle that there will be a level of data that's available open, and I think we all accept that there is some of it has to be open to anybody, then the question is how much of it and what should happen. And if you look around the CCTLD world, you'll see wild variations in the level of data that's available. So there are plenty of opportunities to work through that and to figure out what the best thing is.
My name is Robert Guerra. I'm with the Citizen Lab at the University of Toronto. I want to maybe build on some of the previous questions and comments. There's been a lot of comments in regards to law enforcement access, malware access. Another actor, and this is a lot of work that we do at the Citizen Lab, is actually do a kind of malware analysis, but we're not for other purposes. So the question is, what's been thought about for researchers or academics that are either using it for malware analysis or for others? A couple of points, perhaps, and a way to deal with that is us at the Citizen Lab, in order for us to actually enroll some of the groups, we actually have to go through a formal research ethics approval. That can take 6 months or a year. And that may be a model for researchers if they've gone through that ethics approval to show. And then, so that's, you know, for us, an issue we might want to access. Related to that, and that's the data uses, and maybe it's another slide, I'm not sure, is once the data's been accessed, what requirements are you going to have on the requester to actually abide by privacy of that data? Are they going to be able to resell it? You know, we as a university keep the data private, but that's a concern is once the data's been pulled, who's going to stop anyone from then creating a portal of their own and reselling it? So if that has been envisioned or not is another point. Thank you.
So we've talked about commercial opportunities that exist in this model.
We were talking about this yesterday.
Go ahead then.
I mean, this kind of thing, like the resale abuse of the data is something we have had concerns about. I don't know, Rod or Lanry?
Yeah, so and actually, in your first part of the question is about researchers in general. We actually call that out as a particular subgroup that has different needs than others. So we've actually addressed that within the report. And, yeah, I like the process you mentioned around the whole ethics accountability thing. I think it's an excellent point to bring up. As far as the resale and things like that go, what is preventing people from taking data and doing something with it once they have it? Well, just the same thing as today, nothing, right? So what we're trying to do is create accountability and then rules around what you can do with the data. There's some open issues around there are people who have business models in this area, and you know, there's pros and cons to allowing that or licensing that, et cetera. We're still working through that, and that actually is where we could really use some input from the community as well. What do you want to see happen in that regard and for what various purposes?
Carol.
I have two more questions. One's from Kathy Kleinman. Is it envisioned that the registrant would have access to who is requesting his, her, its data and the purpose the requester has when asked or is asking?
Hang on, stop. Let Stephanie respond to that now.
In terms of the individual requesting his or her data, that's a requirement under most data protection law. So the short answer is yes. They may have to go into the either through the gate to the distributed system or into the larger system, depending on what model is adopted. But that's a simple accreditation of the owner.
Thank you. Carol?
The next one, I'm sorry, I don't know how to say the person's name. DEWOLEAJAO. And the question was more of a suggest. Registry operators working with their local law enforcement might be able to accredit/validate any requests coming from a law enforcement agency outside using existing international law enforcement cooperation. I tend to agree that the system of access can be centralized, but the data in answers should continue to come from the individual registries.
Thank you. I'll treat that as a comment rather than a question. So that brings us to the next one, which is the privacy issue.
And we've talked about, in our report, we've talked about this, and we've talked about effectively, and I'll try and summarize this, but I know that Stephanie will help me out if I get it wrong. Two levels, the standard kind of proxy level, and how we would deal with that, and perhaps more importantly, or more unusually rather, this maximum protected registration. And we're very interested in getting feedback on this about how this could be done. This is a situation where you have situations where you have seriously at-risk registrants who want to register names. And Robert, thank you.
I'm just in the queue.
Go ahead. You are the queue.
Okay, I'm in the queue. This is Robert Guerra again with the Citizen Lab. I think this is an excellent point of the report. I think, as you mentioned before, how you implement it is going to be a challenge. Being able to have, there's definitely going to be law enforcement in terms of identity theft or protected individuals that may need access. There's also the issue of organizations that may want to register a domain name that may be at risk in a particular country. I'm thinking human rights defenders, free expression, and being able to, for them to qualify some of the status, it may seem easy, but to have groups be able to attest for them or going through a vetting system may sound easy. The problem is there's going to have to be some additional resources for some sort of organization. That's the problem. No one's doing this now. One never knows who's going to register a domain name. They may do so. So another idea might be, have you thought of someone who gets a domain name and then wishes to switch to another status? So they're more public. They're a human rights organization. A human rights organization knows that there's this special status and switches them over to a more protected setting. That's something that may happen. Organizations will start their activity online. People will see that that information is available online that may put them at risk, and then it needs to be protected. Doing it a priori sometimes may be hard. And then, you know, in working with human rights organizations and others, but I think there's a lot of different issues that may require a whole separate conversation. And as a next step, I would say definitely engage some of the human rights organizations that have been working on some internet issues. That might be helpful to come up with ideas in terms of how this might scale. Because for a small number of cases, it's easy. Scaling it for the world is going to be the challenge.
Stephanie, did you want to say something?
I think you raised many valid points there, Robert. I'm not sure that the model that we're talking about here would be using pseudonymous credentials to register, the whole point being that with current proxy services, there's no guarantee that proxy is not going to disclose identity features of the group or the individuals behind the domain name. And so going backwards and forwards might defeat the sanctity, if you will, of that process. We don't envisage scaling this out to the world. It's going to be hard enough to get it to work because it hasn't been done before, to the best of our knowledge. So I think baby steps at first. Let's get the truly vulnerable. We are certainly inviting, and if those questions aren't clear enough, let me say from the mic here, we're inviting input and participation from human rights organizations to help us figure out basically the attestation of the individuals and groups who would merit this kind of protection. Yes, it is going to cost money, but anything worth doing is worth doing well.
And just a quick follow-up. I'm happy to help in that regard.
Thanks, Robert. I think I'll come to you guys in a second. I think also there's a really other important point to make here. This particular issue is one about which a significant number of people feel passionately. And it's never going to happen if it doesn't go through this ICANN's process. And for me personally, speaking personally, the biggest stumbling block of getting this through is actually going to be GAC, governments in ICANN, agreeing that this is acceptable. Because they all say that they think that the human rights are incredibly important, but when it actually comes down to it, that's going to be a massive stumbling block. And so we need to start, all of us in this room who think this is important, need to start thinking about that now and working out a way through that that will work and be acceptable to governments. Stephanie, then I'll go to Vasily.
Just a quick point. It should be well understood in response, actually, to the argument that this would come with expedited takedown in the event of alleged criminal activity, and we might have to have an expedited process to determine whether, indeed, it was real criminal activity.
In whose jurisdiction?
I beg your pardon?
In whose jurisdiction is the challenge?
That's not a cure-all, but...
No, I'm just saying that... Yeah. Okay. Vasily.
I have seen a lot of problems which are very hard to resolve in the given model of centralized database. And was several ideas expressed before. I try to combine them. First of one of Jean-François considering this system as a portal, as a place for validated links to the stores of data. And data should be stored in registries, only in registries. And then all registries will comply with local laws. We have no problems how to set privacy and so on. And the centralized system could collect a small subset of truly public data and help to distribute that to all of them. And to maybe to be a proxying agent for the different law enforcements, just to speed up the process to access to the registered data in our legislation. In that case, a lot of problems connected with the different laws, different norms of privacy in different countries will disappear. The registry will abide the laws of its registration. The portal will provide links to these registries and maybe speed up law enforcement of our countries to access this data.
Thank
That's
you.
As a proposal.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Steve Metalitz. I just want to commend you for taking up this maximum protected registration issue, which, as everyone has said, will not be easy. But I don't think it's quite true that it's never been done. I think you will find examples in the CCTLD world. There was extensive discussion about this within ICANN in 2003. So how transferable that knowledge is, I'm not sure. But there is some precedent for this, and it may be helpful to you. I just also wanted to flag, if this is the super proxy, and then we have kind of a garden variety proxy, if you
That's
will.
Right.
Is it your intention to, I know you said there should be accreditation standards and so forth. Is it your intention to flesh those out, or is, again, that something that's left to the policy development process or something similar?
Steve, thanks.
Hang on, Michele, let Susan speak.
Go on. So we are fleshing out proxy and privacy and trying to give those two true definitions. And we did look at .nl and their process for protecting, specialized populations. So we have looked at that, but I think we would advocate something broader than what .nl does. We do need your input on the proxy and privacy. But I think, with the work done on the WHOIS review team, the work done in the latest RAA, that we're on a path forward, and we just like to really make it something that works and isn't abused.
Thanks, Steve. Mark.
My name is Mark Burkell, and I'm wearing my spam filtering hat right now, and I have a question that doesn't relate to privacy. It would be useful to me in spam filtering if I could take if I could access certain WHOIS data in like RBL DNSD format at high speed, so that I could get a sense of how old the domain is and how many times the name servers for the domain has been changed recently, as a way of. I don't need to know who owns it or any of the privacy stuff, but I would like to be able. If this was centralized, to be able to read that data at high speed without messing things up. I was wondering if anyone had thoughts on that.
Yeah, thanks. That's a good question. Unless Rod wants to talk to us, but that's a question of just how the data is presented, really. The RBL DNSD format is one particular format. There could be other formats available. It's just a matter of deciding which elements we would consider to be gated or non-gated and whether you'd need to be authenticated or not authenticated. So, I mean, it's an interesting use case.
Rod?
And certainly one that we're aware of is you have automation processes around domain names for various purposes. That would be one where you would probably accredit various people to be able to access data in that type of format. But that's exactly the kind of feedback we need from the community is to say, how would we need to do that? How would we need to provide it? At what rates and things like that? And that's, you know, then we can go from there and get it.
I'm conscious that we're going to run out of time here, but Carol, off you go.
Last one. This is from Alajan. In one of the reports, I found a question that was not answered. The question asks if this proposal will start a new RFC or a sort of new proposal.
I guess the next process is to submit to the board, then possibly to go through the PDP process. I'm not sure the RFC will come in.
Thank you.
I mean, this is. I think the RFC thing may be possibly to do with the work going on in Weirds and the IETF.
RESTful Who Is and all that.
Yeah. And that's more down to the technology of accessing the data. What we're looking at is the framework and design, which then feeds into policy, not actually specifying the software.
But we have talked about the possibility.
Oh, yeah, we have.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. This is some slide. So this is the users and the purposes, and it's pretty simple, really. Have you got any other ideas about users and purposes? I don't know that anybody's necessarily going to have any in the room, but we certainly want to hear from you if you do have. Hello, sir. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Mark Seiden. I have a question about privacy proxies.
Okay, we'll go back to that. No problem.
You'll get back to it on a different
slide. I'll go back to it now. You go ahead.
So the question is, will this mechanism substitute for the existing privacy proxy mechanism by providing protected data for registrants who want privacy, or will privacy proxies have to submit the true registrant data to this mechanism, or would the privacy proxy's address be in this mechanism just as today it's in the Whois?
So this particular issue is privacy, which is closed. Proxy is different, and proxies that are what Steve called the sort of garden variety proxy. And in that instance, someone want to pick up what we're going to do with proxies?
We have been busy discussing the difference between what is now called a privacy protective service and a proxy service. And basically, the identity of the, shall we call them all, proxies goes into the database, much as it does now. We are talking, do you want to go into the issue of accreditation? Because the watchword for this entire system is greater accountability on all sides, including proxy services.
I mean, the thing is, we're not suggesting for a minute that proxy privacy disappears. But if the proxy privacy services in the future meet certain standards and have to be accredited and have to follow certain rules, then Steve over there is less likely to want to throttle me. Yeah, he wants to throttle me. So, I mean, we're not saying we're going to do away with that. But, I mean, there's some interesting nuances about what would happen. I mean, we've discussed maybe the demand for certain types of services would disappear. But there are other valid use cases of privacy/proxy services that obviously aren't going to disappear.
Susan, did you want to?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, I think one of the questions you were asking there, too, is would the underlying data from a proxy registration be in this database? And we have not come to a conclusion on that. That's still up for discussion. That's something we would love input from, you know, the whole community, and I think it's a hard issue to...
But you're talking about at the privacy level, aren't you? The stuff we are talking about on this previous slide, not at the proxy level.
No, we're talking...
I'm drawing a distinction between what Steve referred to as the super proxy, which is the...
Right, no,
he's talking about the normal proxy.
Normal proxy, right.
Yeah,
okay.
Right, and that is
what I was addressing too, is that that information that, you know, domains by proxy may collect if I use their service, where will that my information reside? We have not come to terms with that yet.
Okay.
So your input would be great.
Thank you, Carol. We're just going to keep going till we run out of time, so let's just... I've abandoned the slides. So they're not, A, I can't control them, and B, nobody wants to read them anyway. So.
Okay, this one's from Gillian Andrews. I am an educator who makes some use of the WHOIS to help students understand possible biases in speech on websites. I am wondering if educational use cases are considered. I'm not seeing them in the report. And if so, what potential uses are considered? What recommendations did you have from educators?
Yeah, this has been done as a use case on research, so this is part of our analysis.
It is a use case. Yes, okay. You're done? Jordan.
Hi, I'm Jordan Buchanan. Some of the previous GNSO, one of the various GNSO iterations of on WHOIS task forces took a look at this notion of this OPOC concept. But the real, not getting into the details of that proposal, but there was an intent there to look at making sure there was contactability as opposed to making information available. And that seems very much intermingled into this proxy discussion. But have you guys given any thought to whether there are ways to improve on contactability as opposed to just giving out registration data?
Who wants to take that? Susan, do you want to take it?
Since
you're the proxy queen.
Yes. I sort of live and breathe them some days. So contactability and accountability, as Stephanie said, is extremely important. And we are looking at some principles for the proxy and privacy providers to, you know, to have to adhere to and be accredited. So right now, as the world stands, you know, each proxy provider has their own process for if you have a right to see that information. And so we would like some of that standardized, and we're working on that. I'm pretty familiar with OPOC. There was some things with that. To me, OPOC would not work, but, you know.
I think I'm asking a slightly different, because you say releasing information. I'm saying, have you given thought to, are there ways to, is it in your remit, or have you given thought to the notion of making it easier to get in touch with the registrant or whoever or the technical operator, whoever the relevant person
is? Short answer, yes.
Okay. And is that reflected
in... Have we found a solution to all the world's problems, including that? No. I mean, we have considered it. We have been discussing it. I mean, one of the simple thing is this, is that I could send an email to the contact point for google.com. It's highly unlikely I'm going to get a reply.
Depends what you have to say.
So we have a queue and we have a deadline, so we're going to try and get through.
Also, not to mention that accuracy and data integrity are number one in our obsession here for making things different.
And it's also important to remember, I think, that, and Stephanie said it, it's about accountability, and there is as much accountability on the registrant as anyone else. Registrants should be required to provide their information, and then there are levels of protection that can be put in place to make sure that that information is not abused. Mikey, I'm going to go to you, and I'm going to ask you, all of you, to keep your, if you can, down to 2 minutes. Mikey, I know it's hard, but...
It's hard. Very hard. This is Mikey O'Connor for the transcript, and this is really just a process comment for you. Basically, you've got a situation here where you've done a fabulous amount of work, but you've kicked an awful lot of really difficult issues down the line to a PDP. And to the extent that you can anticipate the difficult issues and pre-bake some help for the PDP participants, you will improve the odds that we will get through a PDP, because at this level of detail, I'm certainly not volunteering for that one.
So, Mikey, you're obviously psychic. this conversation.
I have dents in my
There
head.
Is a
Mike,
balance.
Say, Mike,
there,
are you saying you want more detail?
Yes,
well,
he's saying.
I want more detail. That's fine. I'm always into that. But I think that one of the things that the Who Is issue presents and the reason that you were formed was because there's also a conversational dimension to this, or a political dimension, or an argument dimension.
Absolutely.
Something.
Yeah.
That, and to the extent that you frame all the old positions very clearly, but don't frame any strategies for driving through those deadlocks, we're likely to just tee up the same old deadlocks we've had.
So you're absolutely before. Right. The balance for us is to figure out how much without... some people will come to us and say, you haven't given us enough information. Other people will come to us and say, you've given us too much. So there is a balance to be cast between those two things, and your feedback that you would like some more detail is much appreciated and understood. I'm going to go to Malcolm, and then Carol, and then Jim, and then back to Steve.
Thank you. Can I make a clarification that related to the point that the previous person at this microphone was making, and that's that contactability and accountability are not the same thing. Contactability is about being able to send a message to the person who is the registrant. Accountability involves being able to lay hands on that person. These are quite different concepts for different purposes. Many of your use cases can be satisfied by simply providing essentially what we've got at the moment, which is a mechanism whereby the registrant can advertise to the world at large if they wish to do so. Here is how you can reach me if you would like to do so, and I am ready to receive messages at this address. Accountability is about making that compulsory so that you can lay hands on that person when they do not wish to be found. Now, I have a question about the criteria issue relating to that compulsory nature, because I think this whole review must be about the compulsory nature, because in my view, the Who is a perfectly adequate means for advertising yourself if you wish to be found. It's only where you don't that the issues arise. Now, regarding the criteria, I would like to ask the panel whether they consider that jurisdiction is a relevant criteria for making my information available. Obviously, any registrant is subject to appropriate authorities within the jurisdiction where they are. But there are other proper and duly accredited authorities and agencies around the world who, nonetheless, any given individual registrant is not subject to their jurisdiction, and it may be breaking their laws and has no obligation to do so. So is it the panel's intention so as to assist extra-jurisdictional, as in people in separate jurisdiction authorities, to pursue their investigations, even when the registrant has no obligation to make themselves available to that authority? Or does the panel wish to limit the release only to those who are within the same jurisdiction? Thank you.
The sound of silence. Anyone want to take it?
I'll take the easy bits, and then I'll pass it on to someone down the table for the harder bits. Right, Michaeli? Obviously, this group cannot harmonize law internationally in 6 months or whatever less time we have. However, one of the issues we have discussed at some length is how we set some kind of harmonized standards for how ICANN functions actually operate. And yes, every single registrar that is operating in a jurisdiction is subject to applicable law. That includes, obviously, my particular remit tends to be data protection law and whatever charter of rights applies in that jurisdiction. There's also trademark law. There's umpteen laws. But the accreditation process that we discussed for law enforcement, hopefully by going through a door, as an earlier gentleman at the mic pointed out, we can set some parameters for what we're looking for in the accreditation of these requests and channel them through one ICANN process.
Thank you. We really do need to finish up quickly, so I know there's more to talk about on that issue, and we'll talk. I mean, the easiest answer is just get yourself a CC TLD name, and you won't have a problem.
Carol.
Hi, this one's from Mark. As an old-time internet user and domain name registrant, I always thought I was giving my data for technical purposes. Is it now being provided for a broad array of purposes and even more in the future? Isn't my Whois data being repurposed? Is that allowed under the data protection laws?
Well, we're not going to ask the data protection question. Yeah, yes is the answer, I think, in the sense that it has. Yes, you are giving your data for other reasons now. Jim.
Thanks, Chris. McKelly and I had an exchange on a previous webinar that you guys had about Jim Prendergast, by the way, for the transcript. It's beyond your remit. I know your answer. But I want to find out why. My question during the webinar was, we've got ccTLDs who are repurposing as Gs now, .la, .pw, and others. ccTLDs make up half the domain name registrations in the world. If the goal of this is so important to get more accurate and thorough Whois and validated Whois, what, not force it upon ccTLDs, but what can we do to encourage ccTLDs to participate in this new regime?
So, Jim, I think that's a really interesting question, and I suggest that you go to the CCNSO and ask them that question and see what kind of response you get.
Will you introduce me?
I'll introduce you. See what kind of response you get. I mean, we can talk about it. I mean, it's a sovereign issue and all of that stuff, but I understand your question.
Thanks.
Steve.
Steve Metalitz. I just want to thank Jean-Francois for bringing back into the discussion accuracy. If you look at this in very, very oversimplified terms, the proposal from the expert working group is currently the public has anonymous access. Everybody has it to very bad data. Yes. And the idea is that there would be some restrictions on access. Not everybody would have access to everything. But in return, or to balance that, the data would be more accurate.
Correct.
So I think it really behooves the working group to stress and spell out in what ways its recommendations would make the data more accurate, who will be validating the data, how will they, you know, what will be the responsibilities there. Because that is really, for many people that I represent, that's going to be the selling point. It may be more difficult or there'll be some hoops to get the data, but it will be better data. So, and that, of course, is a core data protection principle as well. So I hope you can stress that as you continue in your deliberation.
Steve, I know we're rushing, but I have a question for you. Would you accept the proposal that the mere fact that the data is not going to be widely available and open will lead automatically to some improvement in the accuracy?
Yes, but that is not the answer here. That's a cop-out to saying what will be done to make it more accurate,
yes.
to make it more better verified.
Yeah, okay. And finally.
Thank you. I'll make it very short. Given the extraordinary amount of data and the improvement in the accuracy of the data, do you think that it will be given for free to anyone, or is a certain commercial use of the data to be contracted in a commercial way? Is it going to be free or not?
Long right.
I will start.
Hang on,
very high level. Of course, cost is a major consideration into this analysis and this thinking process. We have not got to the detail where I think we are ready to put some proposal. Overall, I think when we look at the overall value chain of all the elements who are making money or costing money, we need to put that in perspective. Now, I used to say, do you agree to pay a little extra money for eggs which are not rotten or not broken? Probably yes. And today, you have access to rotten eggs or rotten data which don't exist or are not so accurate. So maybe to access data, maybe we need to think this is a legitimate element of having some cost element here. The total picture is not yet ready, but we are on our journey discussing this point very heavily.
In addition to that, don't forget that a whole bunch of data elements are going to be made available without authentication, which means you may not even have to pay for it. But there could be some value-added services that may require payment, and that may be good enough to offset some of the cost of operating the system.
And on that egg metaphor, I think we're finished. Are we? Do you want to take it back? No, it's fine.
I think we have many, many other slides, but I think...
Hang on. It's the how to contact us slide. So.
There's also... There's a couple of the... As a group, we are meeting with various stakeholders groups tomorrow.
Three of those.
With three different stakeholder groups tomorrow. Not from lack of trying. We're reachable. We're contactable. We want your input. We want your questions. You can grab one of us in the hall. Not too physically, please. I don't like being grabbed that strongly. There's all those contact details up there.
Okay, and with that, thank you very, very much to all of you. Thank you also to the expert working group. Unfortunately, for personal critical reason, five of us could not attend this meeting, in addition to Steve, who has been busy in another session. I can feel and sense a tremendous will to help and to support, and this is great. This is really, really impressive, and thank you for being part of the solution. I think this is what we need. We need everyone from the community, as Fadi was saying this morning, to help to materialize a very, very important issue that we are trying to tackle all together. You know from these slides, and you know from us during this week to be in Durban on how to contact us, how to access us. There is no proxy here, so we are totally capable to answer whatever it's useful for you to be knowing. We had much more slides on the questions that were posing to the ICANN community, and this will be distributed, so you'll get access to these slides. So please input also on all the slides that we have not been able to cover today, which are very, very important for us. The journey, I can tell you, continues with a lot of passion, a lot of trust. And with that, thank you very much once again for being with us today.
Just an announcement that at 4:30 normally there's the session on internet governance update. You're allowed to take a very brief break, but we're going to start as on time as we can. Thank you.